It's funny how desperation makes you take what you can get, even if it's the worst. The moment I stepped out of prison after 7 years, it felt like the world had moved on. Not that I could blame anyone. My identity was stained, associated with theft, vandalism, and crime. The only luxury I was left was my old jalopy and sausage sandwiches. So when I found the ad for a job as a housekeeper in Caroline's villa, I didn't think twice. No more sleazy part-time jobs at Hooters. No more drunken creeps treating me like crap. I just wanted something to keep me off the streets. The interview was unsettling. Caroline, the lady of the house, was a 75-year-old widow. From the second I saw her, something felt wrong. Her smile stretched too far, like it didn't belong on her face. Her eyes darted around, wild and jittery. Then, without warning, she let out this soft, eerie giggle that sent a chill down my spine. I caught her lips moving, whispering to herself, too quiet to make out. My gut screamed at me to leave, but I needed this job.
There's not much to do. Just clean and help look after my son Judas,
she said, her eyes widening.
He's been resting. My daughter Dahlia likes to keep to herself.
Caroline's laugh filled the room, a high-pitched, eerie sound that made my skin crawl.
Dahlia's a good girl. Quiet, though. She doesn't talk much, just stares.
Despite the weird vibes, I took the job. What else was I going to do? Sleep in my car forever? I packed up my few belongings and moved in the next morning. The house was huge, but not in the grand, cozy way you'd expect. No, it was dark and musty, and every corner felt like somebody's going to jump out at you. Caroline showed me to my attic room.
You'll start tomorrow,
Caroline said, grinning again.
There's only one rule. Never step outside your room past midnight.
The attic door slammed shut behind her, and I was alone with my thoughts in a mess outside. The world stuck with me as I lay down. I didn't sleep well. The sound of wind scraping against the old windows, mixed with a faint hum of whispers from below, kept me on edge. By morning, I was already regretting my decision. Ignoring everything, I started cleaning. The house was a disaster. Caroline and Dahlia lived like they had 5 lives. The filth touched the roof, dirty towels everywhere, dishes crusted with old food. The bathroom was a horror of its own. But my nightmare was Judas's room. He was in a coma, she'd said. So when I walked in, I wasn't expecting the stench of bleach to burn my nose. His room was spotless, like a hospital ward, but the air was thick with chemicals. Judas lay motionless on the bed, pale and sickly. For a moment, I could swear he wasn't breathing at all, but the beeping of the heart monitor reassured me. By nightfall, I was exhausted and passed out the moment I fell on the bed. It had to be around 1 a.m. when it happened. An ear-piercing scream smacked me right out of bed. My heart nearly fell off my mouth when the screams came again, sharp and desperate. Without thinking, I grabbed my flashlight and bolted downstairs. My steps halted outside of Judas's room. The door was slightly open, and the bed, his bed, was empty. The heart monitor was off, the sheets were rumpled, but there was no sign of Judas. My breath caught in my throat. Could he have woken up? Could someone in a coma just get up? A low guttural chant echoed from the basement. My feet moved on their own, carrying me towards the sound. I should have turned around. I should have run out of that house and never looked back. But I couldn't. My legs had grown a mind of their own. I crept down the stairs, one slow step after another, until I reached the basement door. It was ajar, and an eerie orange light flickered from within. The scene inside had me frozen. Caroline was hunched over a wooden plank, her hands hovering over Judas's still body. The guy wasn't in a coma. He was gone. Gray skin, lips sunken, eyes half open. It wasn't Judas, but his corpse. And beside Caroline, Dahlia stood shivering like a leaf. Her eyes were wide with terror.
What the hell are you doing?
I yelled, not knowing it could be my worst mistake. Caroline's head snapped up, her eyes wild. The woman was possessed.
Be quiet. I'm bringing him back,
she screamed. Next, I was flung backward, crashing into a shelf as Caroline wrapped her claws around my neck. White spots danced in my vision, but just before a complete blackout could take over, Dahlia somehow swung a heavy candlestick square at her mother. Caroline collapsed, unconscious. Dahlia dropped to her knees, sobbing uncontrollably.
I tried to stop her,
she whispered, her voice trembling.
Judas died 5 days ago. He fell down the stairs. Mama, she wouldn't accept it. She said the practice could bring him back.
The bile rose in my throat as the realization hit hard. The smell, the bleach, the chemicals, it all made sense now. Caroline had been clinging to her son. We immediately rang the cops, but I was already gone before they arrived. I didn't wait for explanations, didn't want to hear them. As I drove away, my eyes glued to the rearview mirror. I half expected to see Caroline's deranged face grinning back at me, but there was only darkness. I could be free from that house, but I would never be free of its dreadful memory. I was thrilled to start my new job at Whitlock & Associates, a quaint accounting firm nestled in an old brick building downtown. The office had a vintage charm. My desk was by one of those grand windows, and directly across from me sat a woman with long, dark hair that cascaded over her face. She glanced up briefly as I settled in, offering a slight nod before returning to her work. I smiled.
Hi, I'm Emma. Nice to meet you.
She didn't respond, her pen moving furiously over a notepad. The scratching sound was relentless, almost aggressive. I shrugged it off, assuming she was engrossed in something important. As the morning wore on, I couldn't help but notice her intense focus. Pages filled up rapidly, each one covered in what looked like haphazard scribbles. Curiosity gnawed at me. At one point, I tried to peek at what she was writing, but she immediately slapped her hand over the page, eyes still hidden behind her hair. During lunch break, I joined a few colleagues in the break room and caught a smoke with Lily.
So, the woman who sits across from me, does she ever join you guys for lunch?
She gave me a puzzled look.
Who do you mean? The woman with long dark hair, always writing in her notepad.
She chuckled nervously.
Must be one of the auditors from upstairs. They don't gel.
Back at my desk, she was still there, pen scratching away. She didn't eat, didn't stretch, didn't even shift in her seat. The pile of filled pages was now spilling onto the floor.
You know, it's okay to take a break sometimes.
Silence. I returned to my work, but the incessant scratching was maddening. I slipped on my headphones to drown it out. Later, needing a respite, I decided to get some coffee. As I stood up, I glanced at her. She was perfectly still, except for her hand. The way she wrote was almost mechanical, repetitive. In the hallway, I bumped into Mark, one of the IT guys.
Hey, do you know if there's a problem with the heating? It's freezing by my desk.
Mark raised an eyebrow. Haven't heard any complaints. I'll check the thermostat. Back at my desk, the temperature seemed to have dropped even more. I rubbed my hands together, glancing at the thermostat on the wall. It read a normal 72 degrees. The afternoon sun cast reflections on the window behind my colleague. I noticed something odd. Her reflection didn't match her movements. While she wrote feverishly, her reflection sat eerily still, head slowly turning to face me. My breath caught in my throat. I blinked hard. When I looked again, her reflection matched her actions. As the day neared its end, most of the office began to pack up.
Hey, we're all heading out soon. Do you need any help with anything?
She stopped writing. Slowly, she lifted her head, but her face was still obscured by hair. A whisper reached my ears, so faint I wasn't sure I heard it.
They can't see me.
A chill ran down my spine.
Excuse me?
She resumed writing, even more frantically than before. The lights above flickered. I looked around. The rest of the office seemed unaffected. Gathering my belongings, I hurried to leave. As I exited, I glanced back. She was watching me, her face partially visible. Her eyes were dark, sunken, filled with an emotion I couldn't place. I couldn't shake the feeling that something was terribly wrong. The next day, I arrived to find a sticky note on my monitor. "See me in my office, Mr. Thompson." Great. Was I already in trouble? In his office, Mr. Thompson gave me a concerned look.
"Emma, is everything all right? Some of your colleagues mentioned you seemed distracted."
"I'm fine."
He nodded slowly.
"Let us know if you need anything."
Back at my desk, the woman was absent. Relief washed over me. Maybe she'd taken the day off. Hours passed and she didn't show. As I focused on a particularly tedious spreadsheet, the overhead lights flickered again. The screen glitched, lines of random numbers and symbols replacing my data. Frustrated, I called IT. Mark arrived, frowning at the monitor. "That's odd. Looks like some kind of data corruption." As he worked, I noticed a reflection in the darkened part of the screen. Behind me stood the woman, her face inches from mine. I spun around, but no one was there.
"Did you see that?"
Mark denied. He gave me a sympathetic smile. "Take care of yourself, okay?" By late afternoon, the office was nearly empty. I decided to investigate. I approached her desk. The notepad was there, covered in frantic handwriting. I hesitated, then picked it up. The pages were filled with a single phrase repeated over and over. "They don't see. They don't see." A sudden cold enveloped me.
"You see me."
I whipped around. She stood directly in front of me, hair no longer hiding her face. Her skin was pale, almost translucent, eyes hollow and filled with despair.
"I was like you. New. Eager. What happened?"
Tears streamed down her cheeks.
"They pushed me too hard. They don't see. They don't see."
The room darkened. The office lights burst, plunging the room into darkness. I stumbled back, tripping over a chair. When I looked up, she was gone. Emergency lights flickered on. I couldn't move. Days later, after taking time off, I returned to collect my things. I couldn't stay there. As I packed up, I found a small envelope on my desk. Inside was a faded photograph of the woman, smiling, surrounded by people at an office party. On the back, a name was scrawled: Helen Brooks. I approached Mr. Thompson.
"Mr. Thompson, what happened to Helen Brooks?"
He stiffened, eyes narrowing.
"Where did you hear that name?"
I showed him the photo. He sighed heavily.
"Helen was an employee here. She left us some time ago."
"Why did no one mention her?"
She jumped from the window where you sit after she was denied a deserved promotion. Different manager then. She kept saying, "They don't see me. It's not something we discuss."
As I left the building, I glanced back at the window by my desk. For a moment, I thought I saw her standing there, watching. Then, she faded, like a shadow in the sunlight. I never saw her again. Maybe she felt like someone saw her, and she finally found peace. All this time, desperation accompanied me, and I could think of nothing else to do. When I noticed the ads for a secretary, I took it. It was quite a normal advertisement. An elderly woman required a secretary to answer on many kinds of tasks, sounding simple, which at that point I took my life for all that simpler. Mrs. Thorne, the elderly lady, replied promptly to my application and asked me to come over to her place for my first day at work. Her address led me to an old sprawling house on the outskirts of town. It had a creepy charm to it, but I declined, paying heed to the uneasy feelings creeping up my spine. This was my chance to put my life back on track. When Mrs. Thorne opened the door, she warmly invited me in. She was frail and sharp-eyed, seeming to see right through me.
"Would you like some tea before we begin?"
she asked, her voice as creaky as the floorboards under my feet. And to make a good impression, I agreed. I remember the bitter taste of the tea. It was warm yet cold simultaneously. As I continued drinking, my sight became blurry, my body limp, and this is what I remember last: Mrs. Thorne's wicked smile. There was no dawn, yet my eye snapped open to find myself lying in a musty, dimly lit basement where chains bit deep into my wrists. The air inside was icy, damp, without a sound other than the drip of water far away echoing from some other room. Panic overwhelmed me as I strained against the chains, which did not budge an inch. Mrs. Thorne stepped into view at the top of the stairs as she slowly descended them in eerily tranquil movement.
"Welcome back, dear,"
she said, her voice chillingly serene.
What's all this? Why am I..."
"You have a task to complete."
She handed me a set of tools and some wooden boards.
"Build your coffin,"
she commanded. My eyes snapped open in horror. I shrieked for help.
"Are you insane? Let me go, right now."
But Mrs. Thorne only laughed.
"See that on your leg?"
Then pointed to my ankle, an odd device. A bangle-like thing was attached to my right ankle. I watched Mrs. Thorne taking out a small remote, then pressing a red button on it. Electricity surged through my body. I convulsed and barely could keep myself from crying out.
"Now, are you going to do as I say?"
she asked, her eyes glinting with malevolent glee. I nodded, shuddering in agony. I began hammering the coffin together as my brain twisted and contorted for an escape. As Mrs. Thorne spoke sick fantasies to me while laboring, I found out she wanted to have buried a person alive and then all her life listened to the screams. Her voice dripped with sadistic pleasure, and I knew I wasn't her first victim, but I vowed to be the last. Mrs. Thorne didn't know anything about my dark past. I had worked for a secret hitman agency in Mexico. Wanting to start fresh brought me back to the States. My stealth and combat skills weren't, however, on par with the point at which the agency was paying. I meant to use them as my ticket through this nightmare. As I knelt to set the coffin upright, loosening the gear on my ankle with the screwdriver dangling from my hip was merely an automatic act. Every motion was swift and controlled, the byproduct of the years of discipline. Mrs. Thorne remained oblivious to my intentions as she basked in her sadistic fantasy. Finally, I released the anklet. With a jerky motion, I flung myself at Mrs. Thorne, knocking her down to the floor. Although thin and fragile, she seemed to exert untold strength in struggling. My greater strength, in the end, won. I strapped the device to her wrist and grasped the remote.
"Now, you shall obey me,"
I hissed through icy arrogance. From then onwards, tables turned. Mrs. Thorne became afraid and was bound to follow my orders. For the next 3 days, I forced her to write a will, where she left all her properties to me. Next 3 months straight, I played the good secretary. The neighbors got used to my kind disposition toward the elderly Mrs. Thorne. I ensured that everyone had my side as the dutiful caretaker of that old granny. These 3 months, Mrs. Thorne laid like a broccoli around the house. And then one fine day, I put Mrs. Thorne into a wheelchair and placed her above the stairs. She knew the end and begged for her life. With a cold, emotionless expression, I hit the button on the remote. Mrs. Thorne convulsed in anguish as her convulsive movements rolled the wheelchair over. She fell down the stairs, her neck snapping with a grotesque crack. The death was ruled an accident. That was when the lawyer finally called me and told me that Mrs. Thorne had willed everything to me. I pretended to cry and told him how sorry I was and that she was close to me. I demanded some kind of memorial and funeral should be done to pay respects to the dead owner. During the funeral, I made Mrs. Thorne lie in that coffin which I had built under compulsion. As the coffin was lowered into the grave, I sat there and looked at it. My face was unreadable since I had survived and had ensured the future generations would not have to pass through what I did. But for sure, the darkness of my past and what I went through will forever be seen as marks against my soul.